It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Blog Talk Radio.
Nalindilele pakumfwa kamangu kababemba kalila.
Through this song, I remember and celebrate the life of Zambia's unsung heroes. I remember Robinson Puta, Titus Mukupo, Lawrence Katilongu, Michael Chileshe, Patu Simoko, Timi Mvula, Teddy Chilambe, Spox Chola, Brian Chiwangu, Godfrey Chitalu, Alex Chola, and the unnamed mothers, daughters, and sisters that have inspired us all for the greater good of this country. So hear me out.
Welcome to Zambia Blog Talk Radio. Saturday, I believe the 15th, 2017. We're so grateful that you joined us from wherever you are listening from. And happy Easter to everybody. Happy Easter, Kelvin. Happy Easter, Bianchi. Happy Easter, Dr. Patrick. Happy Easter, Dr. Mlenga, and everybody else joining us. Good morning, Dr. Patrick.
Good morning. Good morning to you. I hope you're doing well, and I hope our brothers and sisters in the listening audience are doing well equally.
Yes, I believe everybody's doing all right.
Thank you very much. Good day to you, too, and good day to everybody.
Excellent. Excellent. That's our guest, the honorable, distinguished Dr. Mbikusita, Dr. Akashamba Twambikusita Lewanika. We have a lot of issues, as everybody may be aware, that are going on in our country, Zambia. And we thought that one of the ways we could do or address this issue, Kelvin, is probably look a little bit at our history and understand some of the things that have happened over the years, probably centuries. Because, like they say, people who don't know their history are bound to make the same mistakes. Honorable Wanika, good afternoon to you. Happy Easter and welcome to the show.
Thank you very, very much. Good to hear from you.
Excellent, excellent. Let me begin by asking this question, Honorable Wanika. Most people do not know that you are a prince of the Baroque royal establishment. Please share with us the years His Royal Highness Lewanika was Litunga.
Well, I'm a grandson of Luwosi Lewanika, who was King Lewanika the First.
Yes.
Who ruled Barotland from 1878 to 1816. After that, the Barotu throne was under his first son, Itia, who was crowned as the Yeta the Third. He was followed by his brother, Mwanangona Emasiku, who was crowned as the Mwiko the Fifth. And then followed by another brother, Mwanawina, who was crowned as Litunga Mwanawina the Third. And in fact, became Mwanawina Lewanika later on. After that, my father, Mbikisika Lewanika, became a Litunga from 1968 to 1977.
Yes. Okay. Wow.
Interesting. But my father became a Litunga having served in other public capacities, including being the founder president general of the Northern Rhodesia African Congress in 1948, which was the first overtly political organization on the path towards independence. Earlier than that, he was president of the Kitu African Society from 1944. Earlier than that, he was the founder secretary of the Livingston African Welfare Association in 1929 at the age of 54.
Okay.
He also became a member of the Federal Parliament, the Federation of Rhodesia and Nyasaland, and even became a parliamentary secretary, which is equivalent to a deputy minister. And did a lot of other things, including translating the Bible from English and Sesotho to Swazi, working together with the Paris Missionary Society. So, in fact, he became a Litunga after he had retired from politics and retired from working in Kitwe, where he had worked for Kanamine.
Okay, excellent. Well, I thought we needed to understand that. What is the Litunga's jurisdiction in terms of area, the area or territory, and number of tribes under his kingdom, any Litunga?
Yeah, well, the Litunga is the head of state of the Baroque Kingdom, which is 400 years old and has undergone many changes, and including adversities. For 30 years of those, for instance, between 1834 and 1864, Baroque land had been occupied by a Sotho group called the Makololo under Sebituan. Then they were Barotland regained independence after 30 years of occupation in 1864. And from then on, there were all sorts of problems, internal problems and civil wars. Before my grandfather was made Litunga in 1878, for instance,
you have 1 minute remaining.
Hello? Okay, looks like we lost him. I'm going somewhere with this. I want us to understand a little bit of history of things here before we get to the nitty-gritty of things that happened not very long ago, a few days ago, and the current situation in the country. I think it's important for us to understand those things, in my opinion, and we shall wait for Mr. Lewanika to join us. Where's Kelvin? Kelvin, how are you spending your Easter weekend?
Good morning, Nathan. Happy Easter, Mr. Pianki, Dr. Patrick. How's everybody doing this Easter weekend?
Fine, Kevin. Thank you very much. And you too, Nathan.
Wonderful. Oh, wonderful. And good morning, good afternoon to you and everyone.
Excellent. Yeah, it's important for us to understand our history. I want us to get to... Here's the thing, Dr. Patrick Pianki Kelvin. I'm really having issues with this thing called politicians officiating at this traditional ceremony. I know, Kelvin and Roger, you are going to tackle the specific matter of the issue of HH and the treason and everything else. But I just want us to learn from somebody who is inside the royal family and how these things work and operate, because I'm really contending with this issue of politicians officiating at these ceremonies. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what you think, Bianchi, Kelvin, and when did this start? When did the matter of politicians officiate? Because these guys are kings in their own right. So how does a politician go and they officiate at a royal ceremony? I don't know. Let's wait for him to come back, and he's going to answer that question. And see where we go from there. We shall see what happens here. Dr. Musanje, good morning.
Good morning, Nathan. I'm happy to listen to the history of Zambia. Most of us grew up, but we really don't know about the questions that you are asking. So you're doing a good job. And good morning, everybody who is listening.
Excellent. Okay, Mr. Lewanika is back. Please continue, sir.
Yes, so that the question basically we're asking, in terms of territory, therefore,
yes.
Following the European to speed up the future, the boundaries of Barroso, and I want to raise this matter because there's a lot of misinformation and unfounded apprehensions about this, is that, of course, as Africans, just like our European counterparts of that period, the territories of countries were not cast in iron. Sometimes It is thought that it's only Africans who were in that state, but this is actually not true, because if you look at Europe itself, Belgium itself was created in 1830. So before that, it had different it didn't even exist. And
yeah.
Germany itself, we have seen it within our lifetime being reconstituted, Eastern Germany. So the question of borders have never been ironclad for anybody in the world, including Africans. But with the coming of colonialism, as the Europeans were dividing their spheres of influence, the places of the occupation and so on, they required these borders to be iron-cast.
Okay.
Now, we all know that the casting of these borders throughout Africa have disrespected and split African communities all over the place, so that there is no border in Africa on which you could say, on one side of this border, there is one community which is not on the other side. So that this is still the situation in Barotland. But in the process of defining the borders of Barotland after colonialism, the border between Barotland and Angola terminated through arbitration headed by the last king of Italy. In 1905, they established that border. The Portuguese were claiming that they had influence all the way up to the Zambezi. The Barroso authorities were resisting that claim, and the arbitration was one arbitrarily. So the two contesting claims were simply split in half, more or less. That so that in between, the land that is in Barotsland in terms of the border with Angola, between the Angolan border and the Zambezi, was exactly half of what the Barotsi were claiming.
Wow.
And exactly, and then the borders that went to the Portuguese were half. So that's how it was done. So that border is no longer in dispute. It was settled in 1905. The border between Barotsland and what is now the Northwestern Province was settled by another commission headed by a British judge in 1941, when what was called Balovale area was taken out of Barotsland. That was in 1941. So that border also is not in dispute, it was agreed. By the way, the area that was called Balovale included both Luvale people, Lunda people, and various other separate different communities in that area. Maybe someday we will discuss that, because some of the reports from that still exist in terms of not being completely settled. And even the Zambian government, since independence, has kind of taken a policy of hoping that this problem will just disappear without being faced courageously and justly. But anyway, that's another story. So the border with Namibia, was determined first in an attempt by the British to pacify the Germans before World War I, hoping that there will not be a World War I, and also to answer the demand, the uninformed demand by the Germans to access the Zambezi, which they thought was could be navigated from all the way up to the Indian Ocean to make it easier for them to connect with what they had already seized, which was Tanganyika, which is now Tanzania. However, after World War I, when the Germans were dispossessed of their colonies, the Barotsi government demanded that that land should be given back. However, during World War I, the leader of the Afrikaners and the white people in South Africa, Jan Smuts, the one for whom the Oliver Tambo Airport once named,
yes,
distinguished himself so much as a patriotic British Empire fighter that they rewarded him by actually handing over not only Southwest Africa but also Caprice under the South African government. And I think there's another story there, the struggle for Namibian independence and the struggle for Namibia to be separated from South Africa emanates from that. So the boundaries of Barotsland, as they stand now, they coincide with the territory called Western Province. There are always misinformed assumption that Barotsland has a claim to the copper belt of Zambia. This is not correct.
Okay.
It so happened that Barotsland had separate agreements with the British, which were conducted in a manner that they felt would make it easier for them to be acceptable in Westminster and London. As you know, during the 17th century, there was a growing population of churches and other organizations, the anti-slavery organizations and so on, which was very apprehensive about European colonizing Africa and these concession seekers. So that within Britain, there was opposition to colonization and also particularly opposition to concessions, business concessions by these companies. So that they had an uphill battle to get sanctioned that what they claimed was theirs was theirs. Mm. Now, in the case of the issue of Barotsland, one, the Barotsi themselves, in the face of threats from Portugal, from Germans, and from Mandebele, they themselves, like the Tswanas, like the Sotus, actually requested British protection as a second best option to befriend one of the threatening forces to protect you from the rest of the forces. So that the conduct of those negotiations was so transparent and carried out in a manner that was intelligible to Europeans in Westminster, so that the agreement with Lewanika became more marketable in the hostile environment of Britain, to convince them that this was actually properly negotiated and agreed by proper authority. It was not like buying Manhattan with a few bottles of whiskey and so on. So that in the interest of the British South African Company, in alliance with the British, part of the British government that was in favor of colonization, they found it easier to attack some territories outside Barossa and with Barossa land, so that they wouldn't have to present documents that were unconvincing because they are signed by exes, and some of the people had signed the agreement in northeastern Rhodesia, what became northeastern Rhodesia, were actually Arabs, and even their names on this thing. So they found that this was rather difficult to present. So it was really for the convenience of the British government and the British South African government that part of the land outside Barossaland was incorporated into northwestern Rhodesia for their own convenience. In fact, the minute they did that, they shifted from being headquartered in Mungu to being headquartered in Kalamu and finally in Livingstone.
Okay.
There's also a misunderstanding which assumes that Barossaland is exactly the same as northwestern Rhodesia. This is not correct. Barossaland is the territory that was attached, to which they attached the parts of northwestern Rhodesia, which are outside Barossaland proper.
Okay. Let me ask you this question. Let's go back to a little bit of, I hope we can cover everything here due to time. How long have the Barossaland celebrated Kuomboka ceremony, and did the colonial masters, what was their perception of the Kuomboka ceremony? Did they participate? Did they come? Did they send officials to attend? Or what was their attitude towards this, not just Kuomboka ceremony, but all the traditional ceremonies in the territory?
Okay. First of all, it's not just a ceremony for ceremony's sake.
Yes.
It has the characteristic of all African art, that it's not just something to look at, it's not something to admire and enjoy. It also has a utility value. So that its utility value is that shifting from the flooded area to the higher ground is an economic imperative, a social imperative in response. So it's not just a ceremony.
Okay.
So there was that sort of movement for a long time since the settlement of this area. However, in 1783, there was a particularly high flood, which required more manpower and to evacuate the king.
Yes.
By 1792, King Mulambwa, who was the...
Okay. Is everybody there?
I'm here, Nathan.
Okay. I think we lost him. I thought it was my line that dropped. Seemed to be having a problem with this line. He will come back. I'm sure that but he said, well, we'll get it fixed. He has made a point here. It's not just a ceremony. for the sake of, you see, Kelvin, I was even thinking to myself, I'm like, this may sound boring if I have a historical discussion with him. I don't know what you think so far.
Yeah, we need to understand the history, but we need to use that history to try and, forge progress. How that history is relevant today. I mean, talking about boundaries, what the colonial masters did and things like that. I think we've had those lessons. So I think we're at a point where we need to draw, some kind of comparison or parallel to what is happening today, the significance of these traditional ceremonies, the impact of politicians attending traditional ceremonies, or the dilution of the importance of these ceremonies thereof. I think those are the things that he needs to kind of address for us. I know in the next segment we're going to pound hard, the current issues, the politics, the traditional ceremonies and everything. So I don't know, but it's your show. It's your show, Mr. Nkama. Drive it the way you see fit.
No, we will get there. I'm just trying to whet everybody's appetite before we hit the,
It's going to be hot in 30 minutes. It's going to be hot.
I know it will. Dr. Patrick, I know you read my mind where I'm going with this.
Yes, I'm
trying to play it very smart. By the time we get to the point where I want him to really get to, like you have said, Kelvin, we are getting there. He needs to explain some things here, because me, I just don't want to jump into things. You tend to make things, I don't want it to be shallow, because there are a lot of misconceptions about the things that have happened historically in our Zambia, in our Northern Rhodesia, like he explained, and all those things. And let's just hear what. Okay, I'm sure he'll be coming back.
While he's getting ready to get back online, one of the districts we covered in our one-pagers, in our history one-pages, was Lukulu. And we titled the one-pager for Lukulu called Lukulu, the Land of Plenty, is opening for business. And then we went into a background for Lukulu, and it's timely. It's timely that you're talking about the Western Province and Borosiland. So I think it's great.
Yeah, excellent. We're
still waiting. Let me just say, Lukulu, a market town in the Western Province of Zambia, wonderfully situated at the north end of the Zambezi Borosi floodplain. Every year, the river rises above the low banks of its main channel and spreads across the floodplain, making the soil outstanding for cultivating long grain white rice, loved and sought after throughout Africa. Delicious fish from the river provide most of the local diet and is shared with other districts in Zambia. The pontoon ferry across the river to the beautiful beach, waiting your arrival, lying on the opposite bank of the main channel. The Luwa Plain National Park that extends into Lukulu is rich and bountiful with must-see wildlife. The Mambo Woodland and Cryptosaplanum Dry Forest with Zambezi flooded grasslands adjacent to the rivers and east of the districts are like carrots are for the eyes. The Lukulu Training Center opened in 1994, regularly trains up to 100 students in carpentry, pottery, mechanics, computer literacy, tailoring, and design. Santa Maria Parish and the convert stand beautifully on the east bank of the magnificent Zambezi River. It is home to a hospital, two markets, and several schools. The National Savings and Credit Bank are open and await your business. That's what we talk as one of our district pages, enticing and entreating people to visit Lukulu and Barasiland, Western Province of Zambia.
Dr. Patrick, that was an amazing history. Thank you so much. I'm learning so much on this show today. And with what added, it's just powerful.
Well, that's what we all worked on a while back. That's just Lukulu.
Right.
We have over 31 pages, and I'm learning as you're learning as we go through the history on Zambia Blog Talk Radio. So you congratulating me, I congratulating you, and we all are working to learn the wonderful history of Zambezi, as well
Absolutely.
As the wonderful, 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 and I can say it multiple times, wonderful Zambia.
Thank you so much. Nathan is very strategic with the way he's taking this show. I'm glad that he took the historic route before we can come to current affairs. It's just that our 60 minutes runs up so quickly, and I hope our guests can come back and we can catch up.
Yes. You know, if perchance, is there any way is there any way I can obtain a copy of the Bible that's translated from English or from into the language in Western Province that our brothers began the conversation with?
That's interesting. I know these days we are able to get our vernacular Bibles, or Bibles
mm-hmm.
that are written in our local languages. But how you can get one, we'll see. We can even try it on Amazon. These days, all things are possible. But somebody
Great.
Maybe from home can send one.
Oh, that'd be great.
Okay. Nathan? Is Nathan back?
You know, is Mungu still the capital of Western Province?
Yes, I believe it is. I can be corrected
okay.
if I'm wrong.
Okay, and
Dr. Patrick,
yes,
it is. It's still the provincial capital.
Okay, has it always been Mungu, or has it been another district in the Western Province?
As far as I can remember, it's always been Mungu.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is Mr. Msogotoni. I'm very interested in the topic we're having. As a matter of fact, I am looking at a book right now. It's called Ceremony, Celebrating Zambia's Culture and Heritage. It is edited by editor Malenga Kapwepwe, and
uh-huh.
it's got a whole it just gives you pictures and history of all the ceremonies that Zambia has.
Does it include some of the unsung heroes in Zambia from Zambia?
No, it just talks about all the ceremonies, and it's got pictures
okay.
Of all the ceremonies and explaining what the ceremonies are from all the provinces of Zambia.
Wow.
And
wow.
I've always wanted a copy of that book,
Msokotwani. I've always wanted a copy of that book.
I have it.
Yeah.
At the back of the book, it says www.zm.celtel.com. nathan.com/en. Mm-hmm. I was given this book by a lady in Zambia a few years ago when I went. So
wow.
It was just appropriate that it's right on my desk, and I don't know how else I can advertise this, but it's very, very interesting. Now I'm even looking at it more than
we can even get what's her name, Ms. Kapwepo, to come on the show and to talk about that. There's somebody calling on Skype. Is it Skype? It just shows anonymous. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Dr. Gudas. This is Dr. Kasansa. I'm listening in.
Oh, my brother.
Yes.
How are you today? How is the great, the Emirates?
The desert of the Lord is fine. We are standing.
The desert of the Lord.
Yes.
All right. Oh, my goodness. We are losing time here. And I want Mr. Lewanika to get to the bottom of a very important question I have to ask him. We're having problems connecting him back on the same line, but our good friend and brother, Mr. Daniel Chisebwe, is working hard.
Actually, Mr. Lewanika also wrote this book. Yes. He was one of the writers of this ceremony.
He was one of the contributors to the book.
Yes, it says it right here, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But see, those
are some of the things that you see, when we are back home, we don't value those things or even really think about them seriously. But when you come out of the country and, you know, when you realize how people value their heritage and how people speak about their history in the United States and how they just cherish, you know, being citizens of this country, then you begin to revisit your history and say to yourself, Dr. Kasonso, and you say to yourself, am I really proud of my heritage and who I am and where I come from? It's very important to look at those things, extremely important. Okay, you're listening to Zambia Block Talk Radio. Our special featured guest today is Mr. Akashambatwan Bikusita Lewanika. We are discussing history, which is supposed to lead us up to the current political climate into the country, but we're having problems reconnecting him back. Excuse me. He should be coming for... let me share something here, Dr. Patrick and everybody. Over the last weekend, I went into Atlanta for the first time. I've been invited to Atlanta so many times, I've never responded. But this time, it looks like I succumbed to that invitation, Titus. And three special ladies, Carol Care Foundation. And we've had all these ladies appear on this show, and Touch of an Angel. Some of you recognize those names. And Anakazi Center decided to honor Mr. Nathan for his work and contribution to the Zambian diaspora community. And I'm grateful for that recognition, and should I say extremely humbled? I don't know. It sounds religious when you say I'm humbled.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to mention that I was honored, and I appreciate the recognition by the three ladies. Okay, Titus, what's going on in Minnesota?
I am currently in Indiana.
Pardon?
Okay, everybody. How's
everybody? We can't hear you.
I am currently in Minnesota. No, I'm in Indiana, sorry.
Okay.
Everybody just listening in and checking through what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Excellent. Vomusokotwane, that book. Yes. Does it give any information how one can buy it, an email inside at the back?
Maybe from that email. I don't know. That's why I gave that email. Maybe from that email you can find out how to buy it. It was given to me as a gift in 2008.
Okay.
So I don't know.
What's the email? Just call it out.
Okay. www.zm.com. GELTEL.com/EN. Yeah, it's very especially after what we've learned today. I think it's very important to
To have a copy of that book. Okay, let me see. I think we have Mr. Lewanika back here. Yama, do we have our guest back?
Hello.
Yes, Dr. Lewanika is back online.
Okay.
I'm on the line.
Let me go to this question, Mr. Lewanika. We've lost about 10, 15 minutes, and we've got a very few minutes remaining. Let's fast forward to post-independence. Can we put a finger when or who started the practice of politicians officiating at traditional at the ceremonies?
No, at no time have politicians officiated at Kuomboka ceremony. The Kuomboka ceremony is a traditional ceremony. It's conducted and officiated traditionally by traditional officers. Everybody else, whether you are president or governor or a traditional ruler from any part of Barotland or outside, you come here simply as a guest.
Okay.
You are honored according to your station in life, but you don't become an officiator in the sense that a referee officiates a football match. There is no role for a non-traditional person to play referee over the Kuomboka.
Okay.
In other words, the fact that people are given respect should not be misunderstood. Mm-hmm. That the ceremony has been handed over to them to officiate.
Mm-hmm.
The Barossa culture is a culture of a lot of respect. They respect traditional rulers, they respect leaders, they respect honorable people, regardless of where they come from. But that respect should not be mistaken that there's been any surrender of the responsibility and duties of officiating at the Kuomboka. Because something go wrong at the Kuomboka, there are traditional people to be held accountable for, and they have no authority to hand over their responsibility to anybody else.
So then when we read in the press that the president or the vice president has been sent to officiate, I don't know, I hope I'm not creating or making up things here.
Unfortunately, our media doesn't do its homework, you know.
Exactly.
Even the commentaries on the Kuomboka show people who have just been given a microphone, they haven't done their homework. For instance, they say this is the Litunga of the Lozis, huh? But have you ever heard anybody say that Queen Elizabeth is the queen of the English? A king is a king of a country, you know. In other words, Chitimukuru is a Chitimukuru of Bemba land, not of Bemba. It makes you Angoni. If you go to Kasama, he's your king.
That's true.
So you can't say because you're Angoni and you're in Kasama, suddenly Chitimukuru is not your Chitimukuru. So we need to decolonize the words, even the issues of tribes. Why are there no tribes in England? Why should Yorubas, who are 40, 50 million, be called a tribe? It's an insult. We have not done very well to decolonize our minds, and our language is the major instrument keeping us mentally enslaved. We have to respect our institution, and we have to believe that we respect our institution as respectable as any other institution in the world. That Africans are second to nobody. So the idea that in the British Empire you only have one king, you know, we should forget that. We also have kings.
You see, that's
so
exactly
the media itself needs to do their homework, and they need to decolonize their language and their terminology, because that is part of what is misleading people.
Exactly, because Mr.
And
Leonica,
that misleading also also may cause some bad behavior, because I mean, if somebody tells you that you are the referee, when you are just sitting on, you are given a seat in the VIP section of the stadium, then somebody says you are the referee, you may jump into the field and start calling penalties. So we shouldn't mislead anybody that when you are invited as a guest, however honored and respected you are, that you have taken charge to officiate. That's a tradition that has been there since 1792.
That is the misconception which people, most Zambians or anybody for that matter, do not realize, that the word chief was placed on our leaders, on our kings, by the colonial masters to say there can only be one king in the kingdom.
Yes.
Okay? People don't understand that.
Yes,
or don't
and we must
that.
Resist that. I mean, even under the one-party state, there was a written law that you can't be president of a golf club or president of YWCA. You have to be chairman, because there had to be only one president in the country. Part of democratizing our society is to leave that type of language.
That's
part
true.
Of decolonization is to reject some of the colonialist ideas that only white people can be kings, only people in England can be a king.
Excellent. Mr. Lewanika,
I get so annoyed when someone is, this is the paramount chief, Undi. He's a king of 10 million Africans in Mozambique, in Malawi, in Zambia.
Because
if you are Chitimukuru, why should you even be a paramount chief? Because if you are Chitimukuru, that's the way it says everything. If you are Gawa, Kalonga, Gawa, Undi, that says everything. So if you don't want to call them kings, call them by their African titles, which will speak for them.
Exactly. Let's talk
about... But we shouldn't continue this colonial mentality that our nationalities, our communities, our tribes, our languages, our dialects, our soldiers are warlords, theirs are generals. There are so many languages that we need to decolonize the media itself.
That's
and
true.
And for Africans, they have a double duty that they must decolonize their minds.
It's very
and
true.
And start participating in liberating Africans from mental colonialism.
Do you think the Zambian political scenario has tried to, I don't know what the word to use here. You get the impression our politicians, I'm not just talking about, this is not about the PF. We can go back, like you have said yourself, to the First Republic. Have our politicians tried to use these ceremonies as a, what do you call it, platforms to make political mileage? What's your impression about that?
Unfortunately, it's not only ceremony. You know, I think if I was to appeal to Africans, is that if we are to really democratize and develop our society, we have to stop the politicizing everything.
Yes.
You know, you have funerals at the Cathedral of the Holy Cross with benches, with notices that opposition leaders.
Wow.
When you go to a soccer game, you know, the ministers stay there as party people. We must take advantage of sports events, cultural events, church events, weddings, social events, and depoliticize them. Because if your politicians, everything they do is politicized and on a partisan line, you can't bring peace. You know, our parents, who are the unsung liberators of Zambia, although you say KK is the father of Zambia, we the children didn't even know that they were opposing each other. We thought, like, I thought Mr. Katilungu was my uncle.
Yes.
Because, you see, where they differed politically, it was in the narrow field. In our lives in Usagile, in Kitwe, whether it was football, whether it was church, whether it was wedding, whether it's sending people to school, you know, they were just the members of one society and they were part of the parent class. Now, if you are going to say because somebody belongs to a different party, even when you go to church, you sit on a different bench, I mean, what sort of nation are you building? Because one of the misfortunes of Zambia is that we assumed that the nation was formed when the British flag came down.
Are you okay?
That is when we should have started building. That's when we should have started building the nation. And since we haven't started, we are facing all these divisive things. Because a nation cannot be built on slogans. A nation can't be built on raising flags or lowering flags. A nation is built in the hearts of people, in the lives of people, in accommodating each other in as many arenas as possible, so that the areas where we have to differ politically should not become the dominant area in our lives. People in the opposition agree with the ruling party should be more times than they disagree with them, because now it's as if you disagree on everything. You can't pray together. You can't watch football together. You can't dance together. You can't attend a traditional ceremony together.
Yeah, that's true. That culture
itself is actually unbuilding the nation, and it has done a very good job.
Yeah, it's very true. There's a question.
It is very responsible for leaders to promote the number of places in which partisanship triumphs.
My goodness.
The real challenge of leadership is to reduce the number of times where we are differing along partisan lines. So that when we differ on political lines, it should be seen that we're just differing on political lines. We don't hate each other. We're not each other's enemies, because people have seen us laughing at other times, at other events.
It's true. Two questions from somebody listening, people listening online, Mr. Lewanika. Somebody saying you've been quiet on political issues. What's your take on the current political environment in Zambia?
There are no politics in Zambia. Am I supposed to also join in insulting people? We entered politics to change the system of government. Not to insult Kaunda or remove him or whatever. We said that the system of government of one party state needed to be changed.
Yes.
So we focused on that. If we differ on economic policies and so, we can do that. But if I'm just going to take sides that me, I'm in this group, whatever happens or is done by the other group, I oppose, and whatever is done in my group, I support, I'm afraid ACA doesn't fit into that sort of society. Truly, even when we formed MMD, it was formed for the nation. It wasn't formed just to be a party. If you read this program, it's a nationalist program.
Yes.
If it is accomplished, every national will benefit. That's like when we fought to retain multi-party. Even those who were in UNIP who wanted one-party state also enjoyed the same rights that everybody else enjoyed. This culture of winners is what I don't fit into that.
I hear you.
So if you make me a forum where we can discuss fast, I don't care which native is president of Zambia.
Yeah.
I don't care which part of Zambia it comes from. That is not my mission in the world. I don't even care which party is the ruling party. I'm trying to identify a party which has a nationalist agenda. And my greatest regret and my shame and the pain I feel is that there is none. They are all about who is president, which province has the presidency, who is minister, who is ambassador, which group do you belong to, which group don't you belong to. They have no nationalist agenda.
No.
This is why even our economic policy, we don't even have one. So the donors, the what, they dictate left, right, and center. They decide which road is constructed, which school is constructed. We don't have a policy of our own. We don't, because even when we have, it is done like a shopping list. You just declare you want a school. Then leave it to other people to finance you.
Okay.
I'm afraid that, in my view, what is taking place in the name of politics in Zambia is not even politics at all. It's job seeking, it's corruption, it's money mongering, it's divisive, I don't see anything. For the first time in the last election, to my own shock, I didn't vote because truly, truly, I had no choice. Truly, truly, I had no choice. I was actually shocked because I've spent my public life trying to fight for people to have a vote, to have freedom to vote. Then all of a sudden, I discover that we have achieved nothing. We bring multi-party, you still have a one-party mandate. We give you a vote, you sell it. You get intimidated. So really, it becomes so difficult for principled people to participate, unless I also want to come and eat.
Let's have one final question here before we conclude. You observe that two things that every political party or president have failed to change when they come into power or take office: the Public Order Act and the use of the police. Why are these two issues so hard to overcome, Mr. Lewanika?
Because we have not decolonized. You see, the Public Order Act, the police state tactics, these are colonial instruments, and we have refused to decolonize the country. We have refused to decolonize Zambia. You know, and again, as you say, we're not just talking about Tibet, Lungu, whatever it is. Since independence, we have refused to decolonize Zambia.
Yeah.
After the 1968 election, the 1969 parliament, and I think every intellectual, every citizen should read everything that was done in that parliament in 1969, from January to October, because that's when we reinforced colonialism. Under colonial rule, you had three types of imprisonment.
Mm-hmm.
You could either be imprisoned like a thief, we go to jail, or you could be detained, or you could be held in restriction. The colonial government actually recognized that those being sent to restriction and being detained were, although they said it's criminal, they knew they were not criminals. They were restricted. Mr. Kapopo was restricted in Mungu here. And he was given one of the best houses Africans had at the time. And his family was being paid allowances while he was in restriction. President Kaunda was in Kavompo. He was also given, no African in Kavompo had a better house than him. He was given provisions, and while his family was being provided by the colonialist government. But in the 1960s, it was required that if you are detained or restricted, 6 months shouldn't pass by before your detention or restriction is revealed. The independent parliament of 1969 extended that to a year.
Wow.
The colonialists had a state of emergency, which was reviewable. The 69 said that this can be held at the pleasure of the president. And indeed, from 69 up to 1991, it was held at his pleasure. So we had a state of emergency. So when you see the police state tactics, after 17 years of you as a policeman, as a police force, operating in a state of emergency, where would you learn the culture of civil, you see?
Yeah.
So even when we removed the state of emergency, there was an attempt by Mr. Chilwa to reinstate. And you can go law by law, the Public Order Act, as it stands now, despite the revision following the Murundika court case, it is as oppressive as it was under colonialism. And its implementation if you ask Zambians that before 64, how many of you were affected by the public order? It would be just a handful of politicians.
Mr. Lewanika, I need to stop you there. Yeah, we've run out of time. I think what I need to do is we need to reschedule you to come back and we continue our discussion. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. It might affect my colleague's next segment.
Sorry, I hope it has been helpful because I think some of the issues you are raising, all our people should start thinking about it, not only in Zambia, but all over Africa. Because really,
that's true.
We are almost like if we only have one script.
Yeah, that's true.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.